This is HPR episode 1686 entitled Interview with Joel Gibbard of OpenHand and is part of the series Accessibility. It is hosted by Steve Bickle and is about 27 minutes long. The summary is an interview with Joel Gibbard, founder of the prize-winning OpenHand project.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
This show is an interview with Joel Gibbard, founder of the OpenHand project. The interview was recorded on my phone, which unfortunately created a few glitches. I've cleaned up the audio as best I can. Although frustrating, the occasional glitches haven't caused anything to be missed that cannot be picked up from the context of the recording. After creating an artificial hand for his degree project, Joel Gibbard wanted to continue the work on the hand, with the goal of producing a workable prosthetic hand for $1,000. So he launched the Open Hand project with a successful Indiegogo fundraiser. In this interview, we learn more about the dexterous hand, the project's progress to date, and hear Joel's vision of affordable prosthetics for amputees worldwide. If you've never heard of the Open Hand project, it might be worth watching Joel's 4-minute introduction to the project at tinyurl.com/OHVID. The full link to the video is in the show notes, along with links to the project where the designs are available for download.
Question to ask was what actually inspired you to start OpenHand?
Well, it was I was sitting in my bedroom one day, just wanting a new project to start. I'm just going to do pick something from my notebook. And I thought to myself that I would be incapable of doing any making if I didn't have my hands. In a kind of moment, I thought to myself, "Oh, I should make a robotic hand just in case I ever lose one, so that I have a spare." and that was enough drive for me to start doing. So I thought it'd be a fun project. So I started picking an inium and folding it up, and that was how I made the first one. And I only really saw a realistic application for it when I was at university, and that was as an excuse to make another one for a final year project.
You came away with a degree off of the back of that project.
Yeah. The project went really, really well. My university professors didn't think that I'd be able to, or a couple of them didn't think it was going to be a feasible project in the time scale. So anyway, and unfortunately managed to pull it off. So yeah, it was very well received and got very good marks.
Oh, that's great. With the hand now, you're using 3D printer. Which 3D are you using? You're using the one you originally started with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm still using the one that I started with. I started off with the Lulzbot A0101, which is the first one I think they sold, or maybe the second one they sold. This is based in America. And they were one of the first people to start offering 3D printers commercially. So that I bought that about 2 years ago, nearly 2 years ago now. And started printing with that, still print with that. It's going pretty well. I got a lot they donated to the Open Hand project, Lulzbot Taz, which is still going strong. And we have a Robox, which makes those. They donated it to us as well. So we've got three at the moment. And it seems to have got some more space to put them.
Is this because of throughput, you need so many machines, or are each of them applicable to different parts of the hand?
Yeah, both really. We have the TAS is printing the NinjaFlex flexible filament at the moment. So we're using, so that's limited by the extruder to just print in flexible filaments. The other two printers are printing in PLA, but and at that point we're going to have to get a couple of printers that are always just printing off, you know, like manufacturing rather than prototyping.
Does this mean you'll need to move to a different class of printer, or do you have them?
I'm going to hack a Lulzbot TAS to have three extruders on the same x-axis. So I'm going to take one of their printers and then just duplicate the extruder, and then so it will print the exact same thing times three.
Oh wow! So
like, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, like the old trapezoidal copy things, three in a row at the same time.
So that's the plan, and I'm pretty sure it's possible. So hopefully that means we'll have to have a third as many 3D printers as we would otherwise need to. So that'll save on energy and in speed.
So I guess a lot of people are focusing on the 3D printing because it's the in thing at the moment and in the news. But aside from that, presumably there's a lot going on with electronics, control systems, motors and actuators.
Yeah, well, I think the innovations that we are pushing are at the moment in the mechanical design, so probably 3D printing is the right thing to be focusing on, and at least the mechanical design of our hands. The electronics, we've made another iteration of it, which is basically the same thing but smaller and a few more features. We've been experimenting with different actuators, so we've got some linear actuators now from a company called Fergeli, based in Canada, and they're going to do the job really nicely. But in terms of sort of control theory and signal processing, those are things that I'm really keen to look into. And got some really cool ideas for it, but we haven't had the resources. We're going to be on that front to begin with.
And is this running off of a digital platform, or is it more conventional analog control?
It's all digital signal processing. I mean, our control board is we use the Arduino programming environment, and we use the Atmega 2560 chip, and it's basically just tailored to drive motors rather than lots of digital a normal Arduino board would be.
I see. You mentioned in the introductory video that you use feedback to control the grip. Is this just picking up sensors for that?
Yeah, we don't have any sensors at the moment. At the moment, we're just reading the current drawn by each of the motors, and which is a really robust way of detecting when the hand has gripped something, because no matter which joint you will receive that signal. Whereas if you have pressure sensors on the fingertips, it relies on the fingertips coming into contact with the object. So at the moment, we're just using the current sensing, but we've got at the robotics lab, the Bristol Lab, we're experimenting with a project that does very fine fingertip detection. So hopefully we'll be able to integrate that into our hand at some point, and then we'll be able to do some kind of fun sensing. And to be honest, I don't think that at the moment is going to have a very useful application in prosthetics, but hopefully it'll produce a really cool prototype, and we can experiment with it and find out how we can use it effectively.
Do you have people using the hand at the moment at all?
No, we're still prototyping. We've tested one successfully on an amputee. But when I say successfully, we got everything to work, as is always the way at the beginning. So we're hoping that our next prototype is going to be reliable. And in a few months, we want to get one working well enough that we can field test it, leave it with a couple of amputees and see how they get on with it and find out what's good. Mm-hmm.
So are there any sort of safety considerations you have to put into the design?
It has to conform to CE regulation if you're going to be selling it as a medical device, which we do intend to. So it's work that we're going to have to do at some point in the future, which we are thinking about, but currently haven't sort of started the process. Once we have a fully functional prototype, functional and robust and usable. Safety concerns. The other thing we're looking at is making sure the materials can remain in contact with the skin for a long time. Besides that, I mean, it's never going to be too strong to do any functional bones with it or anything like that. Some people are worried about. We keep it in mind, but I don't think there are any other particular precautions that we've had to consider. Not yet, anyway. Perhaps testing will prove different.
You keep saying we, so I presume there's not just you working on this now? Is there have you other people working with you on the project?
Yeah, it was initially just me. The Open Hand project was, I was on my own. And then in around August of this year, I started having other people collaborate with me. And that's ranged from people doing internships. Now there are three of us working full-time and two people working part-time as well. So it's and also there's people helping to test the hand as well. So we've got Dan, who's our main test guinea pig at the moment, who's been coming down to the lab to test things out with us. So it's very much a team at the point. Since the Open Hand project, we've created, and that's how we're kind of pursuing funding opportunities and trying to commercialise some of our robotic hands.
I see. The whole open source thing is quite interesting, and it's led to some interesting. How much of Open Hand is open source, and how much of what you use to make it is open source?
Yeah, well, we will make all of our work open source, and we intend for it always to be that way. The thing that we've just been rubbish at doing it lately, just actually putting it online and getting it out there, is harder than it sounds. Uploading files is easy, but we want to make sure that people are able to build these hands as well. Things like that in time. And making sure that a circuit design that isn't going to work at all. Differently, some people do where everything is always available. But personally, I'd rather have releases and then release everything when it's ready, when I'm happy with it. So everything is going to be open source. It's just getting around to pushing it out there.
Sure. When you do push it out there, what sort of open source licensing are you firmed up?
Yeah, that's still to be decided. I have put designs up online for one of our previous prototypes, and I used the Linux GNU general purpose license for the software. And to be honest, I had no idea what I was doing. I think I tried to apply the same license to the hardware, but I don't think that's possible. That realistically has any meaning. So, yeah, that's another thing that I need to look more into to do it properly, as opposed to just throw it.
As it is an open source design, do you know if there are any other people who've built hands or are contributing back to the project?
Yeah, lots of people have built hands. programs, actually, all over the world. The difficulty with, because its application is a prosthetic, comes with a certain expectation. So people, the worry is that people make it thinking, oh, I'm going to give this to my friend and they can wear it as a robotic hand. But it's very far from that level of completion. But lots of people have made them as either office projects. So there's the Royal Military College in Canada with the prosthetics project, and they used the dexterous hand from the Open Hand project as the robotic hand, which is the use case. And when it's taken on a robot hand, it's doing some experimentation around that with maybe myoelectric sensors or software algorithms to read signals or looking at people's reactions to robotics and things like that. Those are the perfect use cases, so that people don't reinvent. People that do want to build on the designs. To be honest, I'm not aware of anybody that's made any sort of huge changes. But I do know some people that have printed it.
Oh, that's cool. Are people offering to help from outside of your core team at all?
Yes. Yeah. We've had lots of people offering to help. So far, I've found it impossible to try and organise that. I did it because I wanted to be tinkering rather than organising lots of other people who get to tinker. and as such, we haven't really drawn on many of the offers from people. It's difficult to expect to see them, so proving that a lot to be given is going to work very well. But that said, there are some people doing stuff for us, people that are really, really keen and have a particular interest in the area. There are a few people that are doing various different experimental things. Yeah. So there's somebody who's looking into the wrist connection for the hand. Yeah, so things like that. There are other people helping us along.
So what do you expect the open hand or open bionics to look like in 5 years' time and beyond? Where do you see this project?
Well, yeah, the ideal future would be micro-manufacturing plants in all different countries, developing countries, inside of prosthetics clinics. But the implementation of this technology would be if you could distribute the knowledge and the designs to a clinic who had then the localized skills to scan somebody's arm, 3D print them a prosthetic, and then fit up your goal. So this is what we're working towards. Hopefully we're going to start selling prosthetics in around a year. We'll start in Europe and the US, and we're toying with different ideas for trying to serve developing countries as well as Western countries by way of a certain amount, a certain percentage of each purchase will go towards a hand for somebody in every model. But yeah, 5 years from now, I would love for there to be micro manufacturing units, 3D scanners, 3D printers in clinics all over the world.
Wow, yeah, that sounds like a great goal. You wanted to bring this in under $1,000 a hand. I know that was your original stated goal. Is that looking possible?
Ultimately, yes. The time frame on that is still up in the air. We market some of our products to the hobbyist market and the academic markets, as well as places where people might want robotic hands. And in doing so, use those markets to help supplement our income. So we're going to kick that off in February and see how we get on. But if we can be profitable enough from that, then we'll be able to have the price tag of $1,000. I think realistically, to begin with, they'll probably have to about £1,000, so not dramatically higher. And then we'll have to work towards that goal that it's 100% something that we're going to do in the future. It's a question of when rather than if.
Wow, that's terrific. On the other side of this, I guess funding's, you started with the Indiegogo. I remember that because I've got a very nice set of gloves off of you.
Thank you very much, which I keep
in my bag.
I had several pairs left over, but my own anymore.
Oh dear. So what's been happening with the funding? I noticed you won a prize recently. I can't honestly recall. My research isn't good enough to say who it was from.
Yeah, we've been £10,000 from Intuit in April, and then in November we won another £30,000 from Intel in September, and then another £125,000 from Intel. So we've been very, very lucky with various different competitions that we've been entering. And that's how we've been getting by this far and how we intend to fund our development work for the next 6 months to a year. The next stage after this, we've put in some bids for some different grants in the UK. So there's quite a lot of money out there for these kind of small businesses. And the other thing we're trying to hold off as long as possible funding, either with angel investors or venture capitalist investors, could be really, really good for the business. But of course, there's, when you do that, you're kind of promised huge levels of growth. So it's time for everyone we go down that
route. Some people may say that didn't go so well for MakerBot.
Yeah, well, I mean, for those that do, I think MakerBot have still done an incredibly good job of democratizing 3D printing, even if not through their own. So, I don't know.
I suppose ultimately it's about your ultimate goals and do you get to achieve the vision of the micro manufacturing in the clinics?
Well, yeah, I mean, the real goal is for amputees to have access to low-cost prosthetics. So as long as that happens, it doesn't really matter. Even if we're not individually successful, ideally we'll have, at the moment, there are no MakerBot. I mean, there's a few people making mechanical hands, pulley-driven prostheses. There are prosthetics for kids, but they're cosmetic or they're hooks and things like that. But no one's making cool robot hands for kids. The MakerBot is a viable option for them because kids need a new prosthesis every year or so. There's no way the parents can be forking out £100,000 a year for something like that.
Oh, no.
So I really hope that we're going to have, when we start releasing products a year from now, we're going to start having some competitors. And then we'll create that, a new kind of market. And we won't then have to worry quite so much about our own future as a company. Because whatever happens, somebody's still going to be providing low-cost prosthetic, robotic prosthetic.
I think I've almost come to the end of my list of questions here. Is there anything else that you want to say about the project that I haven't asked about?
That's everything.
That's great. So, the best place for HPR listeners to find more about the project would be?
So there's openhandproject.org. And openbionics.com. So the Bionics website is the one that we're updating at the moment with everything that we're doing. That's probably the best one to follow. When I'm aiming to upload the next iteration of designs in a few weeks, and that will go to both of those websites. So yeah, either of those.
Oh, that's great.
And Twitter at openbionics.
Oh, we tweet. Oh, I'm not following that. I'll have to add that. Okay. Well, it's been terrific. Thanks very much for your time. It's been good to chat. Thank you very much for the interview.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for ringing.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.